This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to this Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. This is podcast number 131. It is the 10th of July and it's 6:30. And today I'm here with my good colleague and co-host, Henry Viola Hare. You can find him at HTViola on Twitter X. And you can find me, Peter Higgins, at Conkers3 on Twitter X. We've got for you today an election special. We're going to talk about the beneficiaries of the Labour victory and the manifesto that they've got, which encompasses all manner of different things regarding growing the economy and different sectors that could be beneficiaries. And he's got loads of stocks for you, ideas, research ideas, stocks to consider. So have I. And we're also going to talk about the June winner of the Twin Peaks Investing Challenge. Someone that's knocked the competition completely out of the park with one single stock from the portfolio of five. But four of those were duds. I think Henry's going to tell me that they are anyway, or stocks he wouldn't have even considered. Right, so first and foremost, we're just going to get straight into the markets because Henry and I have got loads to cover. And Henry's already told me about the intense day he's had and the week. So we've done that little debrief. So we're just going to get on with talking about stocks. The markets, ladies and gents, since we're last here, are lower. The market since Labour's victory is lower. I think the economy, the economists, the analysts, investment institutions are still making up their minds. Tuesday, we hit a reasonably newish low for the past 3 months of 8,132 on the FTSE 100. It closed at 8,139. Today, we had an intraday low of 8,138. We eventually closed up at 8,193, which is, you know, still at the lower ranges of where we were. You know, I keep reminding you guys that when we were here talking about the FTSE hitting the new high, it's an intraday high of 8,474. And that's when Phil was here saying, rubbing his hands together with glee, saying we're going to hit 9,000. And I was concerned that we may be going towards 8,000. Unfortunately, we're here, but I'm feeling a little bit more positive as to where we could be, because now people are start talking about what the positives could be regarding growth. We've got some level of, less uncertainty, not certainty. We've got less uncertainty potentially going forward regarding who's going to be doing what, how they're going to be doing it. My question regarding Labour winning and having the consensus to do whatever they want and the power to do what they want is, where is all the money going to come from? Yeah, and I'm sure Henry's going to have something to say about that as well. So back to the markets. FTSE All Share today closed at 4,483, up 0.75%. FTSE 250, the engine which we need to keep an eye on, closed at 20,927, up 1.37%. So that just needs to keep pushing on from the levels of 20,000 and get to 21 and get to 22, and then we'll drag everybody else up higher. Henry, what have you been noticing about the volatility of the markets, where it's been going? It's not been going much. It's been going sideways, if not lower, the last week or so.
Yeah, we're still in a bit of a range here, Peter, to be honest. I think the Labour victory was priced in for quite some time, to be honest with you. I don't think the markets were expecting anything other than a Labour victory. And the fact that the markets barely shifted on the day is an indication of that, to be honest with you. Historically, Labour and the stock market haven't really been the best of friends. Having said that, I don't think the market has particularly liked what we've had for the last, 14 years. So it's interesting. It'll be interesting to see how we get on now that Labour have got a very clear majority and the ability to bring through some legislation. One of the first things I noticed was that they seem to be moving very, very fast to get things done. They've come storming out of the gates Yesterday, I think it was, they announced the launch of the National Sovereign Wealth Fund, which is looking to crowd in investment in green hydrogen, ports and steel, amongst other things. Now, you've asked a question about where the money's coming from. The thing that caught my eye with this announcement about the Sovereign Wealth Fund was actually the size of it, or lack of. From what I can see, the government's only committing to spend about $7.3 billion over 5 years out of a budget of $1.2 trillion a year. So they're not actually seeming to put that much money behind this idea. Similarly with the house building, you know, they want to double the rate of house building from, I think it's about 150,000 homes a year at the moment. They want to get that up to 300,000 homes a moment out of a population of 60 million plus. It doesn't seem that substantial. Having said that, every little helps. And I'm hoping these little positive incremental changes start to benefit the stock exchange somewhat.
Absolutely, mate. I mean, going back to the housing side of it, they're saying they want to build 1.5 million homes. And the question will be, how much of that will be social housing? How much of that will be council housing? And where is the money going to be coming from? With a rebranded Department of Housing, Communities and Local Government, because they got rid of the levelling up. Remember the levelling up?
Got rid of that.
That's been removed. So now we've got a new department. So all that labelling, all that spending, that's going to be used to get rid of the levelling up department. So anyway, so they've got an ambitious target on par with what they said in going back to 1945 to 51. So let's see what happens with that. I'm going to talk about some housing stocks later on, which I think could do well regarding that particular sort of situation. But yeah, we're both in agreement on this, Henry. The best sort of appointment that I've seen so far was for our entrepreneur, our charity champion, our what he's done in the community for the last 20 odd years or more is absolutely fantastic. Talking about Mr. James Timpson, OBE, getting the role. He was appointed as the Minister of State, Minister for Prisons and Probation. Regarding the justice system, Minister of Justice. And I just thought, wow, you know, because of all the stuff he's done on the reform side of things for prisoners, helping ex-prisoners, enabling people to get clothes dry cleaned, etc., in preparation for interviews. All that work he's done, it's like, speaks to an entrepreneur, what needs to be done, how should it be done, and listen to him. Don't just have him there as some sort of, listen to him. Listen to his colleagues, listen to the people that he's worked with over the last umpteen years in the prison service. And hopefully we can do something. They're saying there's not enough prisons. There's too many prisoners, blah, 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 blah. You know, my colleagues and I were working on reparations before 20 years ago. Yeah. If it was a significant criminal offence, this individual needs to be in prison. If it's not, let's talk about reparations. How can we help them to stay in the community, support them? You know, educate them so they don't go back and commit more crimes, you know, open up more opportunities for them to do things in the community that are a positive, you know, get them to start working with young people in a positive way so they can see their worth in the community and in life in general. So this is an individual that I was thrilled when I saw his appointment, you know, and I know you've been championing him as well because he's done quite a fair bit of stuff in and around Nottingham and around the country.
Oh, it's huge.
Well,
I mean, you know, to give you a little story about Timpson's, I mean, every time I've been to a Timpson shop, I've been blown away by the level of customer service. You know, when I got married, I was running around the day before the wedding, picking up a few odds and ends, sorting the cake out. I had to go and get the cake. And there was a love lock sort of thing. So you could put, you know, this idea where you engrave a lock and you attach it to a bridge or the Eiffel Tower or whatever. Well, the venue we got married at had a place where you could put these locks. And I went into Timpson's to get the lock and I explained, I told him what the engraving was. And he said, all right, come back in 15 minutes. So I went, picked up a few other bits, came back to get the lock. And I said, how much do I owe you for it? And the bloke behind the counter said, no, don't worry, just put 10 quid in the charity box. You know, I thought... It's exactly the same with my local one in Colliers Wood, to be honest with you. I mean, when I take my soles to my shoes to get resoled, occasionally the front split. You don't need a whole new sole on it. You just need the front re-gluing. It's probably a 10-minute job for them. Doesn't charge me a penny, the bloke at Colliers Wood. He just says, 10 quid in the charity box, mate. And it's that, to me, Timpson's embodies what capitalism can be at its best. It looks after the customers, it looks after the employees, and it looks after the community. And it does all of that in a way that it just works. And it's so much more authentic to me than an awful lot of these big corporations that have got ESG and social well-being policies and yet treat the staff and the community terribly. I mean, look at the water boards at the moment, dumping sewage into the waterways and telling us that they're helping the environment. It's bonkers.
It is bonkers, mate. But like you say, the thing about Timpson's and the company and the ex-offenders, some of them that work with them and the franchisees, etc., is that they do what they say they're going to do, and they do more as well in the communities. Not just, like you say, a little paper saying we advocate ESG. We advocate that. It's like they're doing
something. They live it. They live it.
They absolutely live and breathe it. And he's such a when you lead from the top like that and you instill it as a culture within a company, you can't ask for more than that, I don't think.
Yeah.
We need more companies like Timpson's, definitely. Right. So yes, Labour won by a landslide. Lots of institutions are coming out saying this is a positive. The BlackRock Investment Institute, BII, said on Tuesday that recent parliamentary elections in Britain has made valuation of UK equities attractive. Valuation is compelling, and given the perceived political stability leading to better sentiment, we think there is a tactical opportunity in UK equities. So say Wee Lee, who is the Global Chief of Investment Strategist at BlackRock. So there we go. So in that vein, Henry, the Labour, as you said, the Labour government wasted no time around making some announcements. One of the announcements they made was regarding renewable energy, with Chancellor Rachel Reeves, first female. So we doff our hats to her. Well done. Congratulations, first female Chancellor. Regarding removing the de facto ban on onshore wind. Now, this led to a quite heated debate that I had, a really good debate, actually, with a good friend of mine whilst I was on holiday. I was still on holiday on Monday. And I said, you know what? What we actually need is not more onshore wind, right? We actually need to be investing more so in hydro. Britain's an island. You know, we're surrounded by water. Yeah, turbines, expensive. The infrastructure regarding it, the actual construction of it, are expensive. The footprint is expensive. The carbon emissions, expensive. This is not really a renewable that they want to be pushing. They should be going and doing something else elsewhere. But I'll talk about some of the positives regarding onshore wind in a minute. So I was saying about this, and then lo and behold, later that day, there was an announcement. Let me just find my paper in which order I've written this down in. There was an announcement from Drax Group, Henry. This is the first company I want to talk about today. Yeah. We've spoken about it before, so I won't go into huge details about it. But it's a UK-based renewable energy company engaged in renewable power generation, the production of sustainable biomass, and the sale of renewable electricity to businesses. And it operates a generation portfolio of sustainable biomass, hydroelectric, and pumped hydro storage assets across four sites in England and Scotland. And lo and behold, on Monday, they came out and said, and I'm sure this must have been in the works, you know, else prior to Labour, so it's not Labour causing them to trigger this. Drax has appointed a global technology and engineering firm called Vorth Hydro to move its plans forward for its proposed 600 MW, mega, is that megawatts?
Megawatts.
Underground pumped hydro energy storage, PHES project in Scotland. And I thought, well, there you go. What a good start that is. So that for me was huge. And I just thought to myself, if that means that they are going to be doing this particular project, what's it, Hollow Mountain Power Station, in Argyle, alongside all the other bits and pieces. I just think this company could be a potential winner going forward regarding this investment of hydro and everything else. Current share price, close today, it was up 4%, right? Last five trading days, up 7%. Share price at £5.59.5 on a 52-week range of £3.95 to £6.37, yielding 4%. So that's the first one I want to bring to everyone's attention. Half-year results are out in 2 and a bit weeks' time on the 26th of July. So watch that space regarding what they're saying about certain things. I've got another stock in that space I'm going to talk about a bit later. But we've spoken about Drax before, Henry. What are your thoughts on them in that space and the hydro side of it, biomass side of it, renewable electricity?
Yeah, I think there's going to be a huge boom in investment in renewables now. I mean, the Conservatives haven't really prioritised it. They seem to have slashed the budget over and over and over again. Labour want to go in the other direction. So I think companies like Drax are a really good shout. And as I said when I flagged them as a research idea a few weeks back, I think it's a really interesting business. You know, they're not without the controversies. You know, I can't deny that. But I think it's a really interesting business. And I think it's a name that I'd be looking at very, very closely in the renewable space. I mean, to give you one of my own, I wasn't looking at renewables necessarily in the sense of renewable power generation, but renewable fuels. So earlier we talked about the Sovereign Wealth Fund, and one of the areas that the Labour government want to increase investment in is the green hydrogen economy. Now, there are a whole suite of names in the hydrogen space that are listed on the stock exchange. One of the more famous ones that I'm sure listeners will have heard of is Hydrogen One Capital Growth, which is an investment trust that invests in clean hydrogen and energy storage opportunities. They've got quite a wide range of hydrogen and hydrogen-focused assets that are looking at climate change mitigation options. So effectively, there are different ways that you can generate hydrogen. You can transport it, you can use it, you can store it, etc. But these technologies aren't particularly developed. And even where the production capabilities are in place, businesses need investment to be able to actually get the fuel to them and then use the fuel. And those are totally separate technology stacks. And so Hydrogen One Capital Growth, the ticker is HGEN, invests in a whole raft of these sorts of technologies. So you're not just backing one type of hydrogen entity. The shares are available on a PE of about 9, so it's not particularly taxing. Doesn't pay a dividend, being growth focused. You know, these are companies that need investment, and so the trust will continue to make investments in these businesses. The shares are available for about 50p, I think. The range has been between 40 to 60p. It's fallen off a cliff as interest rates have gone up because it pays no yield. It's perceived as a growth type name. But I think that it's the sort of opportunity that if investment in green hydrogen is going to take off, this could do very well.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, Henry. I like the fact it's a portfolio company in the sense of they invest in other companies that are doing stuff, so that it's not like a one-trick pony. And invariably, some of these companies now in this current environment will be able to raise more money as well. Going forward, and it only needs a couple of them to win and to grow and to capture, sorry, the wrong term, but to grow revenue, then I like that. It's not one I've looked at, to be honest with you. Go on.
I was going to say the other thing that really caught my eye is the actual pricing of it. So I've mentioned its price to earnings ratio is fairly low, but if you look at its net asset value, it's trading on an almost 50% discount to net asset value. So you're getting these assets not only objectively cheap, but compared to their theoretical valuations, very, very cheap. You know, you're buying a pound of hydrogen assets for 50 pence. So you've got a fairly wide margin of safety, which I really like, because as we were discussing with the pharmaceutical sector, these businesses, you know, some of them are going to go under. Some of them are going to go nowhere. Some of them will just burn through cash and will never amount to much of anything. But you only need one or two of them to really take off and do well. And that could be, that gap could close very, very quickly. The other name that I was looking at in the space was a company called Clean Power Hydrogen. The ticker's CPH2. And again, this is a business that's got their own method. It's only a single company. This is not an investment trust. But they've got a patented method of hydrogen and oxygen production with a gas separation technique that enables hydrogen to be produced as green hydrogen, and oxygen that is of medical grade purity. And again, these are two gases that I think are going to be in huge demand industrially over the next 10 years. The risk with this business is that that technology doesn't take off. You know, I don't know the hydrogen space particularly well. If their method doesn't become commercially viable or commercially mainstream, or however you want to put it, that's a business that may never get any bigger. It's a tiny market cap of, you know, sort of 30 million, I think. So a much, much riskier play on the sector.
What's the ticker for that one, Henry? Sorry. What's the ticker for that one?
CPH2.
CPH2, yeah. Yeah, it's a tiddler that I've not really kept an eye on, that one. My concern about some of them when they get too small is the capacity to actually grow or even get the contracts that they need to compound any sort of relative growth. You know what I mean? And it's a relatively new one as well, isn't it, that one?
It is. I think it's only been listed a year or two.
Right, yeah.
So I vaguely remember, I think you and I have talked about ITM Power, is it?
I held that years ago. Yeah. I've still got a little rump of it, yeah.
You know, and that's one that went to the moon and came all the way back down again. It's not one I follow, but I think, it's another type of hydrogen technology. It's electrolyzers, I think they call them.
Electrolyzers, yeah.
You know, and again, how that stacks up against something like Clean Power Hydrogen, I'm not sure. You know, you'd have to go and do some research on how this technology works, and look at the pipeline of opportunities that they've got, because, you know, you need to dig a little bit deeper than just the marketing material, because they will all tell you that the target addressable market is enormous. They'll all tell you that they've got a great pipeline of opportunities. They will quote the headline figures of investment in hydrogen. The thing that they won't tell you is that there might be 10 or 12 ways of manufacturing hydrogen, and ultimately probably only two or three of them are going to be, you know, the next BP, if any of them are going to get there.
Any of them get the size of the next BP, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
You know, so it's not a done deal by any means, just because they work in the hydrogen space. But those are two names that that listeners might want to go and have a look at.
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe, and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I'm definitely very, very, very interesting there, mate. I'm going to go back now to the renewable that I was going to add regarding the Drax side of it, and on the onshore wind side, as part of their portfolio. And this is one that I know a lot of people already hold. I don't own the share, but it's one of them that's a little bit better structured regarding its debt and its borrowing. And also, I think some people like the way it pays its dividends, in a sense of its dividend frequency is quarterly. Talking about the Renewables Infrastructure Group, which ticker symbol is TRIG, T-R-I-G. Current market cap of 2.4 billion, share price of 99.2 pence, was up, I think, 2%-ish or 4% today. And it's currently sitting at a discount to NAV of 22%. Its NAV is at £1.2795, and share price is at 99.2 pence. yielding over 7%, and it's got a half-year result out on the 9th of August planned in. But the beauty about this particular one, regarding what it does, it operates a portfolio of projects, Henry, encompassing battery storage, solar, offshore wind, onshore wind, which I'm talking about is because Labour is looking to boost that. And the beauty about this one is, you know, the arguments about when the wind doesn't blow and the sun doesn't shine and blah, 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 you know, about these sort of renewables, is that it's got projects in England, Scotland, France, Spain, Sweden, Republic of Ireland, and Wales. Yeah, so it's a nice, diverse portfolio there. And essentially, what you've got is the board is prioritising as well repayment of their expensive short-term borrowing, yeah, with surplus cash and capital. So they're getting into a much better financial situation. So everything going forward that goes right for them, in the sense of growth and generating capacity, should fall to the bottom line and therefore generate more profitability going forward. And essentially, it's got exposure and the technologies in its favour. Plus now, it's got an incumbent government which is saying, we want to pursue more and increased exposure to renewables. So that's my second sort of renewable sort of play. So Drax and Trigg. So 7.4-ish yield and inflation linked as well regarding what they're doing. So quarterly dividends, inflation linked, 7.4, discount to NAV 22%. And over the past few days, it's up as well. Over the past few days. So that sort of Labour says it's going to do this. People are now going, oh, it's got a big discount and it pays a dividend. They're considering that particular operator. Have you looked at that one before, Anne?
I have. I've gone into quite a lot of detail on the Renewables Infrastructure Group. It's one of my preferred renewables plays, to be honest with you. Okay. I like the fact it's diversified, both technologically and geographically. You know, you're not backing one technology here or one region. I like the fact that it's renewables because, as I've mentioned before on the podcast, I'm quite a big fan of renewable energy. I'm not a big fan of oil and gas companies. Sorry to my my friend at work that works in the oil and gas sector, but I'm a bit of a wind farm fanboy. But I like it as a business. You know, the dividends have increased. I think it's I don't know if it's got the official title of being a dividend aristocrat, but it's a business that has increased its dividends consistently for, you know, 10 plus years from what I can recall from my notes. And I like that, you know, I like that focus on the dividends. I like the focus on the income play. And I think in a world where energy, we've just seen what happened when energy turned off the oil pipelines, you know, yep, governments are going to have to make some serious choices about where we get our energy from. And if they're going to continue to rely on Russian imports, you know, they leave us open to huge problems, huge vulnerabilities. And I understand that there are, you know, risks with trying to decarbonize the grid. It's not going to be a straightforward process, but I think this is the journey that we are going to go on. And so businesses like Trigg, I think, are going to do quite well. So that's a big thumbs up from me.
Well, it's always the first time I've getting a thumbs up from you, Henry. So thank you very much. It's rare. Right, okie dokie. I'm going to do a quick one here now, Henry, before we have a break and you talk about the June winner of the Twin Peaks Challenge. Very quick one because I own this stock, so I'm not going to talk about it too much. But one of the things that the Labour government talked about and pledged was that they're going to reduce the waiting list, right? And they're going to seek additional spend regarding the NHS, et cetera, et cetera. Again, not sure where that money is going to come from. But there's been a massive backup regarding waiting lists for operations and all the rest of it, per se, and just getting to see specialists and getting operated on, et cetera, et cetera. I own this stock already, so I'm not going to talk about it too much. But one of the stocks that I think that could benefit from a lot of the operations that are needed for hips, knees, and so on and so forth is going to be Smith & Nephew, which is currently sitting about sub £11. I haven't looked at it recently. But I own that stock. I bought it before, did well out of it, recently bought it back. Phil mentioned it a little while back, and I held my hand up and I said, yeah, I own that stock. A week or so ago, I'm not losing track of time now because I've been on holidays, but not so long ago, Cevian came out and said they'd thrown down a chunk of change of £430 million and bought a stake of 5.02% in Smith & Nephew. They haven't done that as a jest. They clearly want, as an activist, to see something happen regarding that particular company and to shake the company up. And they're looking for more than what they've got already, which is about 10%, between, 8 and 10% increase on the share price since they started buying that that stake in the company. I suspect that the share price could move on any sort of good news regarding the numbers of revenue they've increased via the ops they've got. Lots of their revenues, obviously, from America as well. So that's another bonus regarding their situation. And if the situation of, how many years ago now was it? 2 years or 3 years ago happens where somebody makes a cheeky bid for them, I suspect with the share price currently at sub 11, the bid would have to start at 16 and the takeout price would have to be nearer to 18, if not between 18 and 20. I'd prefer if they didn't get taken out and 3 years, 4 years from now, the share price increases up to 16 to 20, but it wouldn't surprise me, given the lowly valuation it's currently got, that somebody comes in and tries to make an offer for it. But I hold a stock, so that's all I'm going to say about it. Thoughts, Henry?
Yeah, I like it. You know, high quality business. We have talked about it before, I think. But high quality business, and I can totally see your logic. If we're going to get the waiting list down, that means more people are going to get treated, and that means that there is going to be greater demand for medical products produced by Smith & Nephew. So I can totally see the link. And, you know, if listeners haven't already drawn the line here between what we're doing, we are certainly, the way I've tackled this is to go and look at what it is that the Labour government says it is going to focus on improving in this country. Then look at suppliers for that sector. That's where you get these research ideas from, you know. Sift through, get the names down. We've got lots more coming in the second half of this episode. But the trick to producing these research reports is effectively to get as many names down as you can on a piece of paper. You know, throw them on the watch list, screen them, scan them, look for the profitable ones, look for the ones that might be a bit undervalued or do something a little bit interesting, and then come up with a valuation methodology. And I think Peter and I have talked about valuation a little bit. It may be worth us going into a bit more detail on a future episode about how we value these types of businesses. But certainly at this stage of the game, it's all about getting the names on the watch list. So that's another great name, in my opinion, Peter.
Thank you very much, sir. Thank you very much. Okie dokie, mate. I'm going to spin it over to you regarding the Twin Peaks Challenge, the winner for June, the stocks going 3-2-1. And what portfolio actually won and what was in it, Henry. And I want to say as well, thank you ever so much for the winners of, I think it was February, March, April and May for sharing their pictures of their books. So I think that was Donald Pond 6, Gallon 73, Tiger Wants. There's another name missing, so apologies. Pat. I forgot that name. That name has slipped me. But it's thank Pat. You ever so much for sharing that out. Say again.
It's Pat. Patchy.
Pat. Oh, of course, Patexi. Sorry, mate. It fakes me. I've had a long day, mate. I've had a long day. Patexi as well.
You're too young to be getting senile, Peter.
I am, mate. Mate, I'm nearer to 60 than I am 50. So what can I say?
It's a good thing one of us is switched on.
Well, there you go. You can help me out, mate, when I have my moments, my senior moments. But yeah, and Pat, so thank you very much for sharing that and acknowledging our sponsors. Really appreciate that. And hopefully we get another winner here from Henry and we'll hear what happens with that. And you're all still in the running for the overall competition, which runs until the end of December.
Absolutely. So after a couple of months where we've had tickers and winners that I've recognised, this month we have three, we've got two runners-up and a winner, who I don't think I've engaged with before on Twitter. So don't be shy, chaps. Please do come forward, say hello, let me know what you enjoy about the show. We love to hear from listeners. If you've entered the competition, you know, don't be afraid to comment on the episodes, because we do love the feedback. In third place with a return of 23% for the month of, sorry, in third place with a return of 15% for the month of June, we've got at carefree 38180333, who had an interesting portfolio of T. Clark, Kingswood Holdings, Tech Capital, SRT Marine Systems, and Manolete Partners. In second place, with a return of 23%, we had at DVB99, with a ticker that included a portfolio that included EnQuest, Harbour Energy, Affentra, Serica Energy, and Longboat Energy. Lots of energy companies there. I'm seeing a bit of a theme. But in first place for the month of June, with a fantastic return of 36%, we had at Postman Pat 1965. Congratulations to Postman Pat there. I don't remember him being on the stock exchange when I watched him on TV, but he's had a very good June. good job. And at Postman Pat 1965 had a portfolio comprising Longboat Energy, the ticker is LBE, Argo Blockchain, the ticker is ARB, Eurasia Mining, the ticker is EUA, RC365 Holdings, the ticker is RCGH, and Affentra, the ticker is AET. And the real standout performers in that portfolio were Longboat Energy, which was up 183% in the month of June, wow, and Eurasia Mining, which was up 67% in the month of June. The other three positions all lost money.
Carried on to, well, Postman Pat 1965, congratulations. But yeah, let us know how you care about choosing those five stocks. That's amazing. 36% from two stocks. Absolutely amazing. Right, so well done to the two runners-ups. You're still in the shout for the whole comp. Congratulations to Postman Pat 165. Please get in touch with us via Twitter. DM me regarding your choice of the 15 books we've got choices of. And also, I'm going to need your information to make sure that Shareskope can contact you regarding your 1 month subscription, if you don't already have a Shareskope SharePad subscription, as that is your prize for winning the month of June. Congratulations to everybody that's entered, and I'm hoping that your portfolio is doing well. And we haven't mentioned your name yet, but you're still in with a chance, depending on what's happening with the markets for June. So for July, August, September, October, and November and December. And then we'll discuss who the winners are for the main prizes. Thank you very much for that, Henry. Thank you, kind sir.
You're very welcome.
Right. But before you go, we need to just give people a shout regarding not just the balance, if you've got the details there for the charity for your...
I do. I was actually going to save this until the end.
Do that then. Leave it to the end. Right. I'm going to go back to the Labour manifesto and all the rest of it regarding what they've spoken about. I've got two stocks. I'm going to do them simultaneously, and then we'll let Henry finish off what we're going to talk about. I've got two stocks here, one of which I own, so I'm not going to talk too much about that one. And I'm going to quickly talk about this one. And Henry mentioned it before, that Labour's looking to build 1.5 million homes, council, social housing and ordinary homes as well. And we should be entering a golden era of house building. Major caveat,
it's a good where's slogan.
The land to build on? Where's the money coming from? And where's the appetite from the actual larger builders, right? So all of the builders last Friday had a bit of a pop. It's carried on a little bit since then. And one of the stocks I've looked at, which I think is very interesting regarding what they do, is Gleeson. Liam Gleeson. No, it's Gleeson, right? Ticker symbol GLE. It's a smaller one, this one. Market cap, £338 million. Price range of £3.50 to £6.14. Currently sitting nearer the highs, 52-week high, at £5.90. Interestingly, the past five trading days, it's up 14%. Yes, indeed, Henry. So, yeah, that caught my eye. What are they involved in? What do they do? I'll keep it short and sweet. They're engaged in the business of house building, of course. But its business activities flow in two distinct divisions, Gleeson Homes and Gleeson Strategic Land. And Gleeson Homes, being the revenue-earning segment of the two, conducts all activities for the development and sale of residential property. The strategic land business includes conducting operations relating to enhancing the value of land, and ensuring the value is achieved for the stakeholders. So that's like brownfield sites, wastelands, changing them over to make them suitable for building upon. And therefore, this is Henry's territory. I'm not sure why I'm trying to explain it, but you know what I'm talking about. You can maybe explain it a bit better, Henry. So Gleeson's are the one. It's had a really good move over the last 5 days, up 14%. There's other builders out there, larger builders, but that's the one I would keep an eye on about momentum of growth, because everyone always goes to the go-to stocks, the Barretts, the Taylor Wimpeys, the Persimmons, and so on and so forth. Clearly people are looking at Gleeson now because it's up 14%, but ordinarily they don't. And then quickly, the one that I hold in that space, which isn't a house builder, I'm still sticking with the picks and shovel side of it, is the brick production manufacturer, blah, blah, blah. The person that makes the bricks, the company that makes the bricks, the company that I own is Michelmersh. Spoken about it before, a PE of 10, a yield of 4.4, currently sitting at £1.50, range of 75 pence to 108. They've got their results out in September, and it's only a 94 million market cap. It's a little tiddler, but they do everything regarding bricks and currently own premium brick brands as well, and geographically spread across the United Kingdom. Not really going, I won't tell you anything more about it. Go and do your own research on the company, because I own it. Okie dokie, and I'm not recommending it or tipping it, because I don't do that. I'll leave that for other podcasts to ramp their stocks at their own. That's me done, really, Henry, regarding the stocks that I wanted to cover on the house builders. What are your preferred ones on the house builders, Henry?
Well, I quite like Gleeson. Actually, I say that. I can already hear my friend that I've talked with this about screaming in the background, "You hate it, you hate it." And so, okay. The reason I quite like Gleeson at the moment, and I perhaps didn't previously, is actually that strategic land element. So my understanding of the land segment, you can't just rock up as a builder, chuck some bricks down and go, right, we've built a housing development, now we're going to go and sell it. Because the council go absolutely bananas, and after about 30 seconds of you building, go, no, hang on a minute, you need a permit, and you need planning permission, and it needs to go through, compliance checking, and we need to have access, and we need to have infrastructure, and we need to do a wildlife survey, and have you check the water runoff for it, and what about the local schools, and what about the local shops, and have you got on-street parking or off-street parking, and what about the security that's available for it, have you got sufficient police force to prevent crime in the area, etc., etc., etc. The list goes on and on and on.
I knew you were the man for this one, Henry. I should have just given you the stocks and said, you talk about it. Go on, mate.
Well,
carry on.
Navigating all of that is actually quite a skill. And what Gleeson Land does is specialise in finding these parcels of land and getting them through the planning process, so that when you've got a field, it's a field, right? You're not allowed to just go build houses on it. But after it's been through Gleeson Land, you can. They'll get planning permission to put the roads in, put the infrastructure in. They'll negotiate with the council about all the facilities that are required, the affordability of the thing. They'll negotiate with all the local stakeholders, do the environmental surveys and the groundwater surveys, all the rest of it that's required. And you can go to Gleeson and you can go and buy a parcel of land that is ready to develop. So then all you have to do is find your, say, £50 million and some builders, and you can go and build the plans that have been approved. And that process is incredibly lucrative. You know, it's very, very time consuming. It can take years to get a site through planning. But when you do, the value of the site skyrockets. Now, interestingly, one of the things that I picked up on Mrs. Reeves saying in her first press conference was that she wants to be the pro-growth chancellor, and she wants to simplify the planning process, which means that this two-year period to get houses developed may in theory become a little bit quicker. Now, what impact that is going to have on Gleeson land, I'm not sure, because if it makes it a lot easier to get the development, maybe there's no market for them. Well, in theory, maybe it is ching ching, but maybe it'll also attract a lot of competitors in, because it's now easier.
Yes, of course. We can do that.
A big part of the attraction of Gleeson is this fact that they can do the, they can get the sites approved where other people can't.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, any Tom, Dick and Harry can turn up and get it done in 3 weeks. Why am I paying Gleeson a fortune to do it for me?
Yes.
So there is that angle to consider, but very interesting business. And I think, you know, I've got a position in house building at the moment. I've got Vistry, I've got Michelmersh. I'm not going to be getting rid of them anytime soon. I think if you've got a position in house building, it's worth sitting tight and holding on for the next 5 years, because I think things are going to shift quite dramatically.
Well, there is a shortage of homes, mate. But I think also, and you touched on a really, really brilliant point there, several brilliant points. And everywhere that, and everybody I speak to, and I go and visit some individuals, and they've moved into a new estate and they've bought this house 3, 4, 5 years ago, and they've carried on building in and around it. And the first thing I always ask is, where's the nearest school? Well, it's 7 miles that way. I'm going, what? Where's the nearest, you know, health centre? Where's the nearest GP? You know, where's the bus and transport infrastructure to get from A to B? Where's the nearest shopping centre? You know, and that's what's missing, because they do the building, do the building. It's like, you've got to have a school. First and foremost, you've got to have a school nearby, because it's usually younger families that are going on to these newer estates.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where's the police and infrastructure and the fire service? Where's the nearest fire station to them? You know, you're 15 miles outside of Bury St Edmunds, and the nearest, you know, you've got reserve firemen. You know, you've got me absolutely knackered at half 10 at night, falling asleep when the alarm's going off, saying, Pete, come on now, they've got a fire. I'm going, oh, my days. You know what I mean? You need a fire service, mate.
Yeah.
You know, you need to be able to react in time to save the properties and the fields and the, you know, the farmers' fields and everything else.
Yeah. You're spot on. And I mean, I think I was going to say the other side of this, which we've very briefly touched on here, around, you know, Michelmersh, it's a supplier of bricks. That is one of the commodities that's needed in house building. But there's a heck of a lot else. I mean, I was looking at two other companies before we came on this call, Tymon PLC, who operate in the buildings material industry. The ticker is TYMN. They provide hardware and ceiling solutions for doors and windows, and a whole raft of products for roofs, walls and floors in residential and commercial buildings across the UK and Ireland, but also internationally, so they're diversified. The shares pay nearly 4% in yield, 2x covered. And if there's a building boom in the UK, that cover's only going to get stronger. And in theory, those dividends are going to become even more valuable. You've got Breedon Group, who are a reseller of construction materials. They produce and sell aggregates, stone, sub-base materials for the road construction industry, limestone. They've got a limestone quarry, which is used in agriculture. They sell asphalt, ready-mix concrete, concrete beams, blocks, cement. Again, if you're going to have this house building boom, it's not just the housing industry that will benefit. There are ancillary services that will also benefit. You know, Breedon Group is available on a very untaxing PE of 12. Again, 3.5% yield, 2.5 times covered. It's a great way to play the sector. You don't have to pick the builder that's going to do the best. You just sell the picks and the shovels and let them get on using them.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer via ShareePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code TWINPEETS. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free, and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe to ShareePad today using the TWINPEETS promo code, and you can save up to £69. Visit shareScope.co.uk/sharepad for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
I completely agree, mate. And I've always looked at Breedon Group and I've gone, yeah, soon, soon. And whenever I look again, the share price has crept up higher. I'm going, oh my gosh. Sometimes you just got to just go for it. And if it drops, you can buy some more a bit lower. But ordinarily, on the occasions where I'm waiting and I'm almost become over patient with the stock because I've got a certain price I want to buy it at and no more because I'm greedy like that, the share price goes, bye-bye, Pete. See you later, mate. See you later. But yeah, I agree with you. I think the beauty of the aggregate side of it is that it doesn't have to be affiliated to any one builder, does it? They're all going to need those materials to get anything done. I do like that one. I'm going to have to go back and have another look at it. And if it's not raced away too much, I might have to go and have a little look and add it to my Michelmersh sort of picks and shovels aspect of the portfolio, Henry. But yeah, that's all I've got, mate, really. I don't want to add too many regarding this particular pod and make it too long, given the marathon we had last time. And I'm conscious that I don't want you at 8 o'clock falling asleep because your tummy's rumbling and you've got no energy supply. So what did you want to add more than what we've covered so far? And also, Henry, with regards to the infrastructure, yeah, we've talked about all the different bits and pieces, what Labour is going to be looking to ready the economy for growth and, you know, push for integrity and all the rest of it. Is there any infrastructure sort of plays that you have looked at, you thought, that could do reasonably well that we haven't spoken about?
There are. So the two other elements of infrastructure which I've been researching, one is ports and transport, and one is the steelmaking industry. Okay. I'll start with the ports. You know, you can't really buy UK port operators. They're not listed from what I've found so far. Again, listeners, please do correct me if you're aware of some. But the name that sprang out of me was Ocean Wilson Holdings. PE of 13, yield of 5.2%, covered dividend of 1.5 times. It operates maritime services and it holds a portfolio of international investments, provides towage, port terminal operations. It's the sort of business that if the port industry in the UK really does start to take off, they could come over here and start to invest. They could expand their holdings, they could increase their holdings. It's a way of playing the sector. You know, they also provide shipping services. If the ports are expanded, you'll have more ships coming in and out of UK ports, which is good for companies like Ocean Wilson Holdings. The steel sector is also an interesting one because, again, the Labour government's been talking about the need to protect our steel industry, decarbonise it, but also get it back on its feet because it's been a perennial disaster, from what I can tell, for about 40-odd years. We just seem to have been selling bits of it off There have been plants collapsing all over the place. We've just had Tata Steel, you know, that's nearly gone bankrupt and shut down. Was it Port Talbot? So as a sector, it's not doing terrifically well. And yet Labour wants to try and get it back on its feet. And there are a number of ways you can play the space. I mean, there's Severfield, the ticker is SFR, who are engaged in the design, fabrication and construction of structural steelwork. PE of 9, yield of 5%. You've got Vesuvius, the ticker is VSVS, who provide molten metal flow engineering and technology. They provide flow control and refractory sensing systems for foundries. So if there are going to be more foundries built and foundries upgraded, the technology that Vesuvius sell, in theory, could be put into these new foundries, which would be more revenue for them, and therefore Vesuvius could do well out of this. PE of 10, yield of 4.9%, rising to 5.2% next year, two times covered. And then you've got companies like Spirax Group. I think they used to be called Spirax Sarco, the ticker's SPX. Global manufacturer of industrial and commercial systems, electrical, thermal solutions and peristaltic pumps. Huge, huge business this. It's a global business, so I'm not 100% sure how much revenue comes from the UK specifically, but they've got 1,700 product lines. Reasonable yield of sort of 2%. It's well covered. And again, I suspect those sorts of systems could do well if there is a steel making and manufacturing boom in the UK. And you could get foreign private equity firms and investment trusts and even competitors looking at companies like Spirax Group and going, we'll snap that up, thank you very much, and take the technology for ourselves. So those are three names that I was looking at, you know, four names in the infrastructure space, all of which I think have the potential to do well with what Labour's planning. I'd like to see some more momentum and investment in the space before I really commit to it. Because like I say, steel, certainly, lots of promises. The people that work in it love it, but it seems to have been a perennial disaster for decades. So buyer beware on that one.
Absolutely, mate. Well covered, mate. Thank you for sharing those bits and pieces. Before we go, I suppose there's one bit we need to talk about, and that's the fear of some of the things that they say they're going to do, which might impact people on. And that's the one about the infrastructure regarding rail and the potential statements of it's being renationalised, and to look out for the groups that are exposed to rail and the infrastructure of that, and whether or not any of those get impacted on. And obviously the likes of the ticket seller, Trainline, First Group, etc., to keep an eye on those two stocks as to whether or not what happens. Obviously these range from, I think it's next year through to in 2025, 26 through to 28, some of them could get pulled to be renationalized if they actually follow through with something they've said before. I've not really heard much about it since they got elected. But that's another thing to watch out for if you've got some of those stocks, as to watch for the news flow on that. Any thoughts on that one, Henry? Because you use the trains quite a lot, don't you?
I do. I'm always on the trains. I'm not overly concerned about the threat of nationalisation. I mean, failing lines are all over the place. If private companies are incapable of running them, I see little harm in nationalising them. My play on the sector, I've just opened a position in Journeo Group. The ticker's JNEO, which I think we talked about on the podcast previously. They provide integrated transport solutions. Doesn't really matter whether you're selling those to a private sector company or the government. There is still a need for that technology. So I'm quite relaxed about the threat of nationalisation in the space. For me, the threat of the incoming or the new Labour government actually sits around ISAs. So Rachel Reeves was falling over herself during the campaign to say, we won't touch income tax, we won't touch VAT, we won't touch national insurance. Well, hang on a minute, you've just chopped off your revenue increasing capability, you want to spend all this extra money. So where are you going to get the money from?
That's what I keep saying. Where's the money coming from?
You know, well, she's not said anything about ISAs. There's billions and billions put into ISAs every year. Reduce the limits, cap them, tax them. I don't know. There's lots of things that they could try messing around with. Personally, I think it would be electoral suicide, but
yeah,
they're going to need the money from somewhere.
I'll be flippant now, so please don't hold it against me, people. I'm hoping she's going to go back and she's going to get all that money back that was wasted on PPE and all those contracts that shouldn't have got it. I'm hoping she goes back and goes, wallet. There's going to be a special body of people who are going to be put together, apparently, to go back and look at where all this money went. And I'm hoping we'll see a couple of yachts up for auction sometime soon, and houses that were being bought and luxury apartments that were bought all around the world that are being reclaimed.
Yeah.
You know? So that's not going to be enough money to cover everything. But I'm hoping they don't go after ISAs, Henry, because it's the whole point of ISAs and SIPs and all the rest of it was to make sure that those that can provide for themselves for later stages or invest for their families. You know, needs later on. There are many people that I know that have got a little bit of wealth and actually they're looking after their own kids and their family and their elders as well in their 60s, 70s, because they haven't got the level of income that, you know, disposable income to actually look after themselves and have to finance that or, you know, their two parents or in the case of some families, four elders, you know. So, yeah, I'm hoping they don't go after ISAs and SIPs. And so on and so forth, because the whole point is to encourage people to save and to think about investing long term. Don't attack the ones that are doing it. You know, find other means of clawing additional monies off people without impacting those that are actually investing with money that they've earned already. Don't tax them twice. Don't beat them down to the point that they go, you know what, forget it. I'm just going to spend it now. So, yeah, I'm hoping Rachel Reeves, you know, finds a model that is suitable for everybody. But I'm sure there's going to be some pain felt somewhere by the vast majority of people.
Well, I was talking about house building just briefly. I was having a conversation with a friend the other day where I can't see why the government couldn't raise a special housing bond. So National Savings and Investments, they sell premium bonds, you're allowed 50,000 of those per person. You've got income bonds, you've got green bonds. They've got various issues of bonds. Why not issue a national housing bond paying, say, 4.25% for 30 years? Use the money from that to build houses. So this extra 1.5 million houses that they want to build, but the government owns them. Use the revenue that the social housing tenants in those homes pay the government to pay off the bonds over 30 years. And then you've got the housing stock. You could rebuild the housing stock. Income seekers get some protected income from the government. Seems like a win-win to me. And it's things like that that I think, you know, personally, I'd back something like that all the way.
Henry, that is a brilliant idea, mate, which is why I think we should be sending your name with your CV to the rebranded Department of Housing, Communities and Local Government. Here,
there you go. You see. You'll see me on your TV before long.
You'll be there with Mr. Timpson, mate, OBE. Oh, dear. No, that's good. That's a really, really good call, mate. That's a really, really good call. And you know what? That's a workable one. That's a workable one. Get everyone to invest in their own infrastructure, which is not a bad idea.
There you go. Food for thought.
Absolutely. Right. We are calling it a day, folks. It's been a long old week for Henry and a long old week for me, and it's only hump Tuesday. Wednesday, and we've got Thursday and Friday to do. So we're going to wish you farewell to this podcast, 131. Thank you all for your feedback. Thank you all for so kindly giving all your feedback to our great friend Martin Flitton that was here at Private Punter 2 weeks ago. He absolutely smashed it out of the park. I've not done the numbers and he's not told me the numbers yet, but I think there's at least 60 individuals that have followed his account since we had the podcast 2 weeks ago. And the feedback's been absolutely brilliant regarding what he's done. Before you go, I also want to let you all know that I've done an absolutely phenomenal interview with a phenomenal individual. And you need to go and check it out. It's called Lee Freeman Shaw. The book that he's written is The Art of Execution, which I'm sure most of you have heard about. But he talks about how to invest best regarding the best ideas, the importance of position sizing, why psychology matters. And best of all, he provides you with this winner's checklist, how to go about being a connoisseur. Yeah. How to win big, how to cultivate multi-baggers. So you can find that via my Twitter feed and the Investing Matters Twitter account on Spotify and on YouTube. So please go ahead and watch that. And there's an exclusive on that interview as well, which I'm sure you want to have a listen to. That's it done, Henry. Anything you want to add before we go, mate?
Just a quick one from me. A big thank you to TraderMark72 for donating £100 plus £25 gift aid to our Centrepoint charity appeal. I'll read you the message. A young friend of my daughter's recently found himself homeless. This has been a distressing and saddening experience. Thank you for raising awareness of this issue and for your continued work. I, for one, am very sorry to hear that, Mark. I hope your daughter's friend is getting some support. Thank you very much for your charitable donation. And thank you to everybody else that has donated as well, because people need the help. They really do need the help. We're now at £2,697 towards our £5,000 target. The link is justgiving.com/page/TwinPete'sChallenge24. If you can donate, please do donate, because there is nobody that deserves to be homeless. And this charity does an awful lot of good work in helping people to find safe, secure homes. So again, if you can donate, please do. It is the link is justgiving.com/page/TwinPete'sChallenge24. Thank you again, TraderMark72.
Brilliant. Thank you, Henry. And thank you, TraderMark, for that donation. And you can contact me at any time via Twitter, DMs, TraderMark. And if I can help in any way, signposting or support groups that can help that particular individual, please send me a DM and I'll send you in the right direction, or send you some links to where that young person or adult can get some support and some help. Okie dokie. All right. That's it, folks. We will say au revoir and we will see you in 2 weeks' time. I hope you enjoy this one. Please give us your feedback. Please show some kindness to others on Twitter and in real life as well. And do what you can in your communities. And Henry and I will see you in 2 weeks' time. Hopefully not as tired. Enjoy the sunshine if and when it happens. And Wimbledon will continue with that as well. And the football. Let's hope that England do the business. All right, guys, ladies, gents, bye-bye for now.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with Sharepad from Sharescope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit sharescope.co.uk and discover the advantage.